Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba. Hi, Mark DeLuzio, episode 78. I was sitting around tonight watching television and started looking at some of the LinkedIn posts and started seeing some major layoffs at some very prominent companies that we would all know, not to mention who they are. And many of the people that are laid off are the people who are supposed to make the company, or at least, you know, promote the company to be better, the lean professionals. And I know some of these people personally, and they are phenomenal people that are being asked to go away for some reason. And I've seen this movie before. It's not new. And by the way, if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble, I am recording this episode in black and white because I think it's a... look, I don't want to say it's a funeral, but it's one of those things that is so sad to see that after, you know, three or four decades of, and quite frankly, Danaher bringing the modern lean movement to the United States in 1987, which I was lucky enough to be a part of, right? We are backtracking here. We don't get it. And look, there's a lot of reasons for why lean transformations fail. There's a lot of reasons why I wrote my book, Flatlined. And I do talk about this to some degree in that book. But this episode is called The CFO versus Lean, The Fight That Gets Lean Leaders Fired. I'm not using the word laid off or reassigned. I'm using the word fired because that's exactly what's happening here. And I want to walk you through my experience. I am credited with being the quote-unquote father of lean accounting. And I've mentioned in other podcast episodes that when I did this, I did not sit there saying, hey, I'm going to invent lean accounting. I mean, we didn't call it that back then. We just did what we thought was the right thing to do. Like a lot of things that we did at Danaher, we just said, oh, wait a minute, this stuff doesn't make sense. And we had the courage to challenge conventional wisdom, batch production and more changeovers versus less, not running as many parts out of a machine if we were going to produce more than takt time, you know, things like that. And those are tough things to get around. But, you know, to our benefit, we had inspired leadership with a guy like Art Byrne, who was a group executive. We had George Konesaker, Bob Pentland, who's our VP of operations, who, by the way, is an unsung hero at Danaher. And sometimes I think that if it wasn't for Bob, there'd be no DBS. But let's not, I mean, everybody deserves credit. Don't get me wrong. But Bob really made stuff happen at Jake Brake so that when George Sherman came in as a new CEO, he came here first. He came to Jake Brake first to see what we were doing. He heard all this buzz about all this great stuff we were doing. And we made incredible progress. But by the way, you know, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. So I want to say it was too hard, but we totally, you know, transformed the company. A story for another day. But I was allowed to come back after I went to Japan and work with Shingijutsu in the late 80s. And 1990 was my first trip over to Japan on a study mission. And I had been a pretty damn good cost accountant, a traditional cost accountant. I was trained by the best. And I really knew my stuff. But as I learned lean, I started seeing that the things that we were asking our leaders to do, how people got measured, how they just wasted their time in meetings explaining variances. Okay. And I'll get to that in a minute. In how most of what we were measuring instilled dysfunctional behaviors when you really pair them up against the lean philosophy. Okay. And I learned that a lot of CPAs who came in and audited us, and even those guys from corporate at Danaher, they were afraid of lean, of cost accounting. You want to know why? Cost accounting is freaking complicated. And even cost accountants didn't understand it sometimes. It was a complicated deal. So to expect you in a very complicated system to provide data to management to help them, run their business when it was that difficult to understand. But what good is that? Let me give you an example. Variable overhead efficiency variance, variable overhead spending variance, fixed overhead absorption variance, direct labor wage rate variance. I mean, I can go on and on and on with these freaking variances that nobody seemed to even understand. And then you got the direct overhead, or I'm sorry, the overhead allocation rate of 297% on direct labor. What the hell does that mean? Okay. Nobody knew what it was. All right. So I learned that that had to be blown up. And I was in cost accounting for 7 or 8 years before I, took the job with George Koenigsegger. And none of this stuff made sense anymore to me. So I looked at this, and luckily I chose not to be a CPA. I'm a CMA, Certified Management Accountant, because I didn't want to go into the auditing and traditional accounting industry. There was a little bug inside of me that said, "Don't do that," and I'm glad I didn't. Okay, I guess you can argue I didn't get corrupted, but the problem was nobody understood this stuff, and you look at, absorption variances and standard costs and purchase price variance and arbitrary overhead and our capital expenditures. I remember taking, when I became CFO for George Koenigsegger at Jake Brake, I took all of our capital appropriation requests, all this, we call them CARs, capital appropriation requests, and there's a box on every one of those things that says annualized savings. And I took 1 year's worth, edited it all up, and the total came out to be greater than our cost of sales. I mean, we were saving so much money by buying capital equipment. It was incredible. So I went back to George Koenigsegger and I joked around. I said, "Hey, look, we should just stop making J breaks and just buy capital equipment because look at the money we're saving. My goodness, it was all BS." Now, I'm not blaming the engineers who put this stuff together. They were victims of the system. Hey, you save a dollar of labor, you're going to save $2.79 of overhead. Really? No, you're not. Okay, but that's the process. Okay, so the whole thing was screwed up. And when it came to standard cost and variance analysis, almost every single meeting that we had, which I stopped, of explaining our variances to standard cost, the argument went like this: "Well, the standard's wrong." And you know what? They were right. The standard is always wrong. The day you set the standard, it's wrong. Okay, think about a standard cost as a budget for a particular product cost. Now, when have you seen a budget and then a year later compared to actual to that budget be exactly what you forecasted 12, 13, 14 months earlier? It doesn't happen. Okay, so we had made tremendous progress in Jake Brake, and we were taking inventory down like you wouldn't believe. And then I ended up, creating a system where We only made two inventory transactions. We received raw materials and we shipped finished goods. And everything else backflushed in between. We made all the levels of the bill of material phantoms, and we just blew through the bill of material right to the root materials and backflushed. We were turning inventory so many times that I convinced the auditors, our public auditors, twice, 2 years in a row, not to take a physical inventory because our inventory balance was inconsequential. I mean, if all the inventory went away, it wouldn't have really materially impacted our financial statement because we were turning inventory so many times. So what happened though was as we take inventory down, the accounting profits take a hit because you're not capitalizing your production cost back into inventory, which is what's called absorption. Okay, absorption credit. You are just taking inventory down, and all that inventory is hitting your profit and loss statement as an expense. So as you take inventory down, you are going to, in fact, have a negative accounting hit to your profit and loss statement. Okay. So the two individuals who started Danaher were multi-billionaires. Stephen Mitchrails wanted to find out what's going on at Jake Brake. Now, I was a newly minted CFO. I was in my 30s, early 30s. And they wanted to fly down because they heard all this great stuff that was going on at Jake Brake. And the financial accounting numbers weren't telling the story. So they came down, they wanted a meeting. Of course, here I am, the CFO, and I had to explain all this to them. So here's what I told them. I said, look, accounting profits are bull. It's what Wall Street likes to see. It's what maybe you guys like to see. It's what EPS, earnings per share, is calculated on. But in the final analysis, what really matters is cash flow. And we're taking a negative absorption hit to our profit and loss statement, and our accounting profits don't look great because we're taking inventory down. But sooner or later, once we get down to a base level of inventory, you're going to see this thing go crazy in terms of profits. So all that negative profit is phony money. It's really all about free cash flow. And we showed them the cash we were generating by taking down inventory and also reducing CapEx. I created a whole new way, and I have an episode on this somewhere back in the annals of this podcast on capital expenditures and how you look at it from a lean, how you look at capital expenditures from a lean perspective. But they looked at that. And I said to them, look, guys, your stock price, if you believe the finance professors that I had in my MBA course, represent the present value of all future cash flows. And that's what you got to think about. It's all about cash, not about accounting profits. That's bull. And none of us in operations even look at these things because they're meaningless to us. They looked at each other, they shook their heads. And they said, got it. Thanks a lot, Mark. They got up. They went and did a plant tour, got on the corporate jet, and flew home back to Washington, D.C. Okay. How many CFOs do you think could explain that to them? How many CFOs do you think would have the courage? How many owners who have a public-facing, New York Stock Exchange company would even have the tolerance to listen to this? I mean, I give Stephen Mitch a lot of credit. Okay. They got it. These guys are smart guys, but they got it. So this is the problem that we have, guys. Okay. One of the things that the CFO of a lot of companies that I've met, what they don't understand, not all of them, but I've met some pretty good CFOs. Matter of fact, I'm just working with one right now in South Africa. Okay. But a lot of CFOs don't understand that in order for a lean transformation to prosper, to work, they cannot be in the stands with their green eye shades and clipboard keeping score. They are instrumental in the transformation, which means they've got to get educated in lean. How many of you out there, all you lean professionals listening to this, have asked your finance people to be involved in your Kaizens? How many of those people are just far away in some office somewhere, working on their spreadsheets, doing their reports that don't mean anything to anybody, and you never ask them to get involved and to learn? Part of this responsibility is yours, okay? To make sure you grab them by the collar and say, come on, I need you on the Kaizen team. And we've had tremendous success doing that because you really got to get them to see, not just to, try to understand from a from academic perspective. By the way, there's plenty of academics out there in the lean community. They ain't gonna help you. You got to get them on a Kaizen so they can actually learn. So, how many have you done that? How many have actually asked your finance people to get involved? And what you're doing is you're pulling them out of the stands and getting them in the arena to fight with the lions, like you are. They can't be observers. They can't be spectators with their little clipboards, measuring you on all of the traditional things that they know how to do. Because those traditional things will end up killing you, and they will get you fired. Okay? I'm sorry. I've seen it time. This just happened this last week. A good friend of mine called, said, hey, I got laid off. Phenomenal lean guy. Six Sigma, lean, phenomenal guy. And he really gets the stuff that you can't see. He gets the stuff that you that are invisible. It's not just about calculations and technology. It's about people. And this guy gets it, okay? And they let him go. So I don't know what was behind that, by the way, but he wasn't the only one. But a lot of lean people got either, consolidated, let go. The CFO has to be part of the transformation. If your CFO is not a part of it, then get your resume ready. It may not be this year, it may be next year or the year after, but it's not gonna work. Okay. I've seen this movie too many damn times. And part of the problem is our schooling, our colleges, corrupt these financial people, and just a whole idea that a CPA is an auditor means that he's overlooking your shoulder. She's overlooking your shoulder. I had one colleague tell me that their CFO said, "I need to count. I need belly buttons. I need to eliminate belly buttons." My God, that was such a horrendous thing I've ever heard. I need to eliminate. I want belly buttons. What the hell? Who the hell is this person to even think like that? We don't want these people on your team. Belly buttons? I don't know. When I heard that, I just was floored. How somebody could be so insensitive to people. And by the way, that's not a characteristic of finance people. I think that was a characteristic of this individual, okay? But this is what you hear out there. I want belly buttons. My God, I don't know what to say. This really does upset me because it's not getting better. And, you know, when we see, construct our compensation systems around these crazy metrics like purchase price variance that incentivizes large volumes of inventory, breaking the just-in-time concept, absorption by just making stuff and throwing it onto the balance sheet because you put it into inventory and you get some nice financial credit. Pay me now, pay me later, okay? Pay me now, pay me later. None of this stuff works. Standard costs? How about we track actual costs and directly charge to a value stream? That's what lean accounting was all about. We got rid of 90% of our overhead allocations and charge it directly to a value stream. We put it in this big pool called overhead, and then we did some back of the napkin math and said, okay, well, overhead is $5 million and our direct labor is 2.5 million. So we have 100% or 200% overhead rate. You know, it's like, really? That's how we allocate cost? Foolish. Absolutely foolish. It's convenient. Hey, look, that's easy math. I did that math when I was in my earlier days, when I worked for Lego, the toy company, and a blasting products company, and a typewriter company. What's a typewriter, Mark? Okay. Another hardware, a builder's hardware company. I've done all that. And, you know, at the time, it made perfect sense. And when I was young and just out of college, I started learning all this stuff. I started saying, I never even questioned it. I it was like somebody smarter than me had to put this together. Why? Who was Mark DeLuzio to just out of college to challenge cost accounting? Geez, they taught us this in college and they've been doing this for a century. It's all basic stuff. It's got to be proven. It's got to be right. But then when I went to Japan and George Konosaker and Art Byrne sent me over on my first study mission, and I also had a couple of years working with Shingajitsu at Jake Break. And I started trying to, you know, make sense of everything we were doing. And none of it made sense. None of it made sense. When your finance guy comes down and says, hey, I want you to justify, I want you to justify how much money you saved us. Well, right there, that question is just absolutely, the premise of that question is absolutely wrong. Because a good lean professional should be teaching people how to fish so that they can prosper and improve their processes. If your company thinks that you, as a lean office or whatever you are, is responsible for putting points on the board and doing projects, well, good luck with that. Get your resume ready. You'll be out the door in a couple of years, if not sooner. It doesn't work, guys. That's not what your role is. Your role is to transfer capabilities, build capabilities, both explicit and tacit knowledge within the company. Not to do projects. Now, hey, look, we're going to work on projects that are meaningful to our strategy to get the benefit out of it. But your main role is to teach other people how to fish. And so you get the finance guy coming down asking you, how many points did you put on the board? Where's the ROI? I yet to see any CFO walk into a bank and deposit ROI. That might be a question to ask them next time they ask that question. Hey, let's go down to the bank today. I'll buy you lunch. We'll drop in, and I'm going to see you fill out a deposit slip for ROI. It's bull. Bull crap. It's bull. Okay? So next time your finance person asks, you know, justify your lean office, I would just respond this way. Look, I'm not a finance guy. I really don't know how to do that, but I'm sure you've already done it with your people. I'm sure you've already done it with your financial analysts, with your accounting people, with your controller, with your whatever. So why don't you show me how you did it? How did you justify your people? And then maybe I could take that model and adopt it to figure out how I would justify to you my department. Why is it this lean group always gets asked that question? I don't see that being asked of marketing. I don't see that being asked of human resources. Certainly not finance, because they're the ones asking the question. I don't see it getting asked of anybody. Okay? Besides this lean group. It's almost like it's an anomaly. And that, I guess that's just a signal that says they don't believe in what you're doing. They don't believe in anything. And part of the problem is they don't understand it. So ask them that question. See what they say. You know, I've said this before to you guys. In the 9 years I worked for George Sherman, our CFO, CEO at Danaher, who to me was the greatest CEO I've ever met in my life, God rest his soul. He never asked me once, and neither did Larry Culp, by the way, who I worked for with and for. At the end, I worked for Larry for about a year. Never asked me once, how much money did you save, Mark? Justify your department. Hey, you got that budget there. What's your ROI? Never asked me that question. Never asked me that question. And because they knew what my role was. We negotiated that up front in terms of what the purpose of the DBS office was going to be. And it was all about exporting capabilities. That was it. Yeah, we had other things we had to do too, don't get me wrong, but that was it. The main purpose of our existence was to teach other people how to fish, starting with leadership, by the way, because if you don't do that, it's a non-starter. Okay, because if they don't understand the fundamental principles, if they don't have hands-on knowledge and experience in doing this, then it's all academic. And you got a lot of academics out there in the lean community right now, writing books, people who've never done it, people who claim they've done it. When you really, ask a couple of questions and go through two levels of questions, you find out that they've never done it. Okay. But they think they know how to do it. It's a client I had. I think I told you this in a previous podcast, just recently last year, who I fired. The CFO, who was the key transformation officer. We went into their company and it was a mess. And we got into a big debate. He's very defensive. He says, Mark, you don't need to tell me about lean. I worked for McKinsey for 3.5 years. I consulted in lean and I know all there is to know about lean. I'll leave that there. What's wrong with that picture? Now he was the CFO. Okay. He had an emotional quotient of a snail. And that company is going to continue to flounder when you got leadership like that. Okay. So I hope some financial people are listening to this. Or maybe you could take this episode and forward it to them. And I don't mean to, be uber critical of them, because I know the environment in which they've came. See, I had an opportunity to be presented something so different. It was at the right time in my career that made me challenge all the stuff I knew and I learned. And I was good at what I did, believe me. For me to come to the conclusion, Mark, this is wrong. We've been doing this all wrong. And a lot of things that we're doing were just pure non-value adding. Matter of fact, they weren't non-value adding. They were value detracting. Okay. So I don't mean to be, really down on the financial people, because I understand, believe me, because I was one of those guys. I understand where they came from, how they were schooled, and what their mentality is and what their thought process is. So I don't mean to be rude or crude to them, but I want them to wake up and just take a step back and challenge everything you do. And like I said, I met a couple of good CFOs over the years that were really, right there. I was, like I said, I was just with one a couple of weeks ago in South Africa. He is really eager to learn. He does understand that there's a lot to do, and that the focus of his group needs to change. And I didn't have to fight him at all. He was like putty in my hands because he was so agreeable, and he really, he had the DNA that he really got it. Okay. So it was a pleasure working with him because he didn't have to argue about every single little thing and unwind stuff. But in some cases, you're going to have to do that. And because, it's hard to unwind something that's been ingrained in them all these years. Now, one of the other things to remember is your managerial slash lean accounting does not have to be GAAP compliant. It does not have to be Sarbanes-Oxley compliant. It doesn't have to be anything compliant. You could do that any way you want. I did not amortize tooling. If one of my guys bought 6 months worth of tooling, it hit their expense of that month, and their costs went through the roof. Well, Mark, that's not fair. You got to amortize that tooling. Yeah. And the argument was, oh, I got a great price on it. Well, congratulations. Next month, you're going to look great because you're not going to have any tooling costs. But this month, go explain to the vice president of finance of operations why your costs went through the roof and why you spent the company's money for 6 months worth of tooling. But Mark, I got to get a great price. Congratulations. You wouldn't do that at home, would you? But you're doing it here because it's not your money. Okay. And by the way, what if the design changes and that tooling is no longer applicable to your production? Which, by the way, it did. Okay. You see, it doesn't have to be compliant to all these legal accounting and regulatory accounting requirements. You can construct your lean accounting any way you want to drive the right behaviors. And those overhead costs that we couldn't directly charge to a value stream, we allocated them based on square footage, which promoted people, incentivized people to reduce their floor space. We freed up 50% of the plant at Jake Break. We had tennis courts and basketball courts on the shop floor. And then as the business grew from 70, 80 million to 250 million, 240 million. We reclaimed that space with new equipment as we grew the business. You see, it doesn't have to go by the books. This is your business. Manage it the way you think you need to manage it. And this is what the accounting people need to learn. Okay. Hey, look, we're going to do all the fiduciary things on the financial side, report to Wall Street, all the right accounting, protocol, all the rules, all the, oh yeah, we'll do all that. Not a problem. That's easy. You get your lean accounting. I mean, you get your accounting system. Now we got it down to a 2 day close, really 1 day, but 1 day to review. We got down 2 days from like 20 days. Now we can be navigators, not historians. So we put in target costing, CapEx analysis, where we're looking at CapEx from a lean perspective. So you see, the finance group could end up becoming a real competitive weapon, or they can become your biggest enemy. So I'll leave you with that. I hope this helps. You know, you might be listening to this saying, yeah, geez, I wish my CFO would hear this episode. Send it to him. Have him call me. I'll be happy to talk to him. Okay. Have her call me. Okay. I mean, I'm sick and tired of seeing good, lean people get axed because they're no longer considered value added to the company. And that is total hogwash. So this episode was CFO versus lean, the fight that gets lean leaders fired. Hope we can turn the tide, guys. Hope we can turn the tide and get this crap to stop. Because I tell you right now, I've been doing this now for close to 4 decades, and it's getting freaking old. Same arguments. Same circus, different clowns. Sorry. Okay. I hate to be so rude about it. I'm just upset about it. I'm upset that we still have to have these arguments. Look, the finance group isn't the only reason why lean transformations fail. However, this CFO reports to somebody who doesn't get it. Otherwise, you wouldn't have the problem. But they're not the only reason, but they're a very big reason why lean transformations fail. Okay. Okay, guys, episode 78, CFO versus lean, the fight that gets lean leaders fired. Hopefully we can kill that and stop the trend, stop the tide. We'll see you guys next time. Stay lean. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.